Hi, my name is Allison Meath. Welcome to LAFPI's podcast series. The Los Angeles Female Playwrights Initiative is dedicated to encouraging and promoting the work of female playwrights, and today I'm going to be speaking with Danai Gurira about her play The Convert, playing at the Kirk Douglas Theater in Culver City. Danai is an award-winning playwright and actor, and her work has appeared at Woolly Mammoth, Center Theater Group, and Yale Repertory Theater, among others. She won the 2010 Helen Hayes Award for Best New Play, Best Playwright Award at the 2010 NAACP Theater Awards, the 2006 Outer Critics John Gastner Award, and an Obie Award also in 2006 for her play In the Continuum. As an actor, she's most recently been seen in the Academy Award-nominated film The Visitor, as well as television shows such as Tremé and Lie to Me, and she'll also appear in the third season of The Walking Dead coming soon. So welcome, Danai.
Thank you.
Well, The Convert takes a very intimate look at the colonization of Africa at the end of the 19th century, and you traveled back to Zimbabwe to do research for the play. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the gestation of the idea and your process as you created the play.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Zimbabwe, though I was born in the United States. My parents went back when I was very young. So my formative years were all there. I came back here for college and have lived here since then. But I've always been fascinated and intrigued by the complexity of our history and of the formulation of the Zimbabwean identity, and the post-colonial identity, and the colonial identity, the pre-colonial identity. So researching this play was something that was, of course, very exciting for me, because I was able to really delve into the questions and the complexities of this time and what might have, you know, influenced who we are today back then. So, I went to Zimbabwe. I go to Zimbabwe pretty much every year anyway, but I got to go specifically to do this research a couple times and to actually talk to historians and go through the archives and just, you know, feel out different people's perspectives of our history and of course do a ton of the more traditional research. But it was very, very enlightening to actually delve into this, because we don't tend to explore our history very much sometimes.
Well, the character of Mai Tamba is particularly interesting. She functions kind of as a bridge between the traditional beliefs of her people and then the rapidly encroaching beliefs of people like Chilford. She mm-hmm. also happens to be a bit of a trickster character as well. So I wondered, does she ever really buy into what Chilford is selling?
Not really. I don't really think so. I don't think she really does. I think everyone, you know, is sort of has their own perspective. I think her perspective is that of, you know, traditional religious beliefs on the continent, and traditional religious beliefs of her people, of the Shona. And she's a very intelligent woman, and as a woman, she has to navigate the world in a very specific way to figure out how she can get what she needs done. She can't do it the way a man can do it. She can't be straightforward and direct about it. So she's a strategist, and I think a part of, you know, her connection to Chilford. I think there is a truly a mother-son relationship there in a sense.
Yeah.
And at the same time, she sees him as somewhat misguided, and he somewhat sees her the same, ultimately.
Fascinating. Well, who speaks for God seems to be a perennial issue for us as human beings, no matter which culture you're born into. But in The Convert, this is really brought to a head when Chilford tells the character of Esther to meditate on the word long-suffering, which appears in the scripture. So I wondered if you could talk a little bit about this scene and its importance for the rest of the play.
This scene is very pivotal to me. It's really a scene where you see all the complexities of and the pathologies of the onslaught of colonization and how it intertwined itself with Christianity. Because Chilford, he has intertwined the two, and I think Esther's navigation is: does she continue to intertwine the two as well, or does she find a way to dissect the issues and see things for herself, see things more clearly through her own eyes? But I think it is a tragic scene in some respects, because it really does embody the aspect of how the colonizer has set a way of life that says the smart way for the African to live is to accept this white man's authority and superiority. And he is trying to teach Esther that with knowing, and there's a knowing in him, I believe, that what he's teaching her is it's fact in the sense that it is an imposition, that if you do not, you will not be able to excel in their system if you don't accept it, mm-hmm. but it's not truth.
Right.
There's no truth in the idea that they are in any sense superior or in any sense deserve more respect. Mm-hmm. But there's a fact in how the world is functioning at this moment in terms of how he hopes for her to excel, that she has to accept this oppressive mindset and this oppressive way of allowing yourself to be oppressed in order to actually, ironically, excel in this system.
Right.
So there's the pathology therein, and of course he finds the word long suffering, which I think has what she uses as she's quoting back to him the scriptures. But I think the irony in the usage of that word is the fact that it's not intended for to accept a level of absolute oppression and injustice.
Mm-hmm.
But he uses it in a sense to try and appease her, because her mind is so sharp that she can see that this is not right, and he it's very difficult to appease that when someone can see that this does not make sense.
Yeah, it's one of the language of the play is actually one of its most beautiful attributes. And not only are the language of these two opposing groups obviously different, there are long sequences of the play that are in the native tongue that are left untranslated, but the rhythms of the words are also as well. So I wondered how that affected your process as you played both the characters and the cultures kind of off one another.
Well, no, I mean, really, the thing that I find so unfortunate is how little the rest of the world knows about how richly interesting and complex post-colonial Africa is. I think they get one little sliver of information about Africa, and it's always the most sensational stuff, which is real. But it's not all that's there. It's not what I grew up around every day. I grew up in Africa. One could argue, well, is that real Africa? Yes, it was real Africa. And it was not the same as what people see on CNN's 4-second soundbites. And so I think the aspect of how richly complex people are, they speak like that. I didn't have to go. All I had to do was tap into really listening to how a Zimbabweans speak and how they would have spoken 100 years ago, but which is connected to how they speak now, of course. How they speak is that complicated. Sometimes it's in Shona, sometimes it's in English, sometimes it's both. It's mixed in, it's all around. There's ways that people have totally, you know, put malapropisms all over how they speak English, but it still always makes the most amazing amount of sense one can imagine.
Yeah.
And so that type of stuff, when I started to tap into the complexity of how I know Zimbabweans just are, and how we are actually very linguistically interesting people, as Zimbabweans specifically, I always go home and my mind gets sharpened by how people have figured out how to create a terminology for a present-day phenomenon or how they're discussing a certain issue. It's always really fascinating in the linguistic sense. Mm-hmm. It's because we had, you know, the colonial presence was so powerful in southern Africa. That's really where the Brits and the Dutch and everybody really settled in for the long haul, and we're not leaving. This part, we're not leaving. They left to the west. They couldn't hang because of the weather and stuff, but they really settled in our part of the continent. And as a result, we have this very, it's totally very influential on our linguistic palette. And it results in the sort of complexities you hear in the play. So really, I was just listening to the fabric of the life that I know of. And then, of course, I had to extrapolate into making it more period, which was very fun to do. But, you know, it really is just how Zimbabweans, how post-colonial Africans are, very complex people, which is, I'm always fascinated to go home and learn more.
Yeah. Well, lastly, I mentioned that you'll be appearing in the next season of The Walking Dead, which a lot of people are excited about. But what's next for you as a playwright?
Well, I'm really looking at navigating this conversation, this dialectic on the experience of the Zimbabwean and who we are today and where did we come from and through, and it's something that it's a personal quest I want to know, and the way I really delve into things is I write plays about them. So this is just part one for me of a series of plays God willing, that allow me to really navigate this. this journey of the African, the Zimbabwean, into their present day. And so right now I'm actually writing a play that sort of outside of, it's in the 21st century, but it deals with that final stage, I think, of the journey of the exploration of the identity, which is the diaspora and the first generation Zimbabwean. So it's actually, it will be based here in the United States. But it deals with the African, the Zimbabwean family that lives in the United States, and the children now have very different accents from their parents, as do I with my own. So it's really kind of the closest to home for me. It really deals with present day specificities, and is very inspired by my own family to some extent. I'll also be looking at the idea of a trilogy, which is what this play is supposed to be part one of. Is about looking at three major moments in Zimbabwean identity formation, which is, of course, the first play, this play, right around the time of Zimbabwe's first colonization, the second play, which where the rebellion panned out, you know, unfortunately, and then the second play would deal with the second moment of our development, which is when 80 years later there's another war with a different outcome, and then the third play will deal with 2008, going into the 21st century, where, you know, the present-day complexities of Zimbabwe democratizing itself and growing into its own democratic voice starts to reveal itself.
Well, fascinating. We will look forward to that, I'm sure. Everybody listening will be looking forward to it as well. So thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're just opening now, so thanks so much for your time today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, The Convert is a co-production with the MacArthur Theater Center and the Goodman Theater and is directed by Emily Mann. It runs at the Kirk Douglas Theater through May 19th. And for more information about tickets, visit www.centertheatergroup.com/tickets or call the box office at 213-628-2772. For more information about LAFBI's resources, activities, and opportunities, please visit www.lafbi.com.